Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 184 on Tuesday the 12th of June 2018. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew. And this week we will be talking about how Dieselgate has taken yet another turn. We'll also be discussing another money grab in London and how the use of language is actually quite important, it turns out. But first...
It's going to go on for hours, everyone. Hours! We've got Dieselgate and the word autonomy. Oh, gee whiz. Sorry, Andrew. As you were saying.
And the EULAs. Right. First of all, though, yesterday, the Audi CEO, Stadler, had his house raided by German prosecutors, and they are investigating fraud and false advertising. He is amongst 20... suspects, of which their identities have not been disclosed. And this is on the back of, though, this is on the back of him and another 27 people being called, summoned to court to give evidence, which will happen later in the year, but also includes Winterkorn.
Well, it's the great and the good of Audi, of Volkswagen Group, isn't it? Because it's Martin Winterkorn, Rupert Stadler, Jörg Körner, who's head of Porsche powertrain development, Ulrich Hackenberg, former Audi technical director, Wolfgang Hatz, the former Porsche CEO and VW Group engine development boss, Jens Hadler, the former powertrain development boss, Heinz Jakob Neusser, the former powertrain development boss as well, Bert Gottweiss, which is the former quality management chief, and Michael Ganninger, former head of legal affairs, all of whom we've mentioned before.
Yeah. Also, they have called some parliamentary members as well, and they're also bringing someone from Bosch. They think that it's the CEO Denner from Bosch that's been told to rock up and give information. So, well, as is happening with all this sort of stuff recently, since we said, oh, there can't be anything else. And there's been a tremendous amount of news. I'm still struggling to understand why it's taken so long. If they are still doing raids, I can understand if they've got all the details they need, and they are having to carefully go through it and build a case that they feel is, you know, there is no get out. I can understand that, but to still be raiding. Unless it's a cultural trait that no one will have deleted things or bashed them into a million pieces or burnt them or buried them or done something with them. Quite why people will have stuff left, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Unless they are truly stupid. If they have been directly involved in this and knew of this information and things like that.
It's all rather strange, to be perfectly honest. I'm not really sure at all. I find it amazing that it continues. I don't know if there's some political will for it to continue, or if there is some political either politicians or within the various investigatory forces or between some sort of competition amongst the state governments in Germany.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. And I'm not sure that most Germans know either.
No. So we're going to have to, unfortunately, keep bringing this up because more information will come out in due course.
We don't have to, you know.
Yes, we do. Because
we probably should.
For closure. Eventual closure.
Closed out.
When we're buried...
Yeah, quite. We'll still be twitching. But like a diesel game.
But in a potentially, well, this is probably good news for Volkswagen because they can draw yet another line. But they have reached an agreement with the state of Oklahoma, and they will pay the frankly tiny amount, considering all the other monies that have been spent, of $8.5 million. Again, this is over false and deceptive advertising to do with the diesel emissions. So that has been agreed. That is done and dusted. That's another state crossed off another thing for them to move on from.
You're saying another line drawn. I've bought pads of squared paper that have fewer lines than the number Volkswagen have drawn.
I think it's so engineer far. Graph paper now they're on.
I know. They really do what the 1 mil stuff. Yeah. They're really
doing that's it.
Squares.
Right, your bit of follow-up.
My bit of follow-up involves the ultra-low emission zone, which is going to expand from October 2021 to a mere 18 times its original size.
And it's not even in yet.
Yeah, I know. So, it's going to expand to cover the entire area of London within the North Circular and South Circular roads. And all of that's going to cost £12.50 per day for non-compliant vehicles.
Every day, 24 hours a day.
That's 24 hours a day.
There's no time off for weekends, no time off for bank holidays, nothing like that. It is 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. If you have a non-compliant car, you have to pay £12.50. But it's not a tax on the poor or anything like that.
Diesels that don't meet Euro 6 and petrols that don't meet Euro 4. Basically anything that could possibly be considered a classic car.
It's been a long day. This evening I double-checked and still my 2001 Saab 9-3 is still exempt.
Well, you see, this is when you do the whole tax on the poor thing. And what I want to do is ask you how much your Saab 9-3 cost, Andrew. Because it fits into the, you know, Mr. Pollitt could have bought
it. Yeah, absolutely.
It fits into that bracket. So there are a lot of cars that do fit into that bracket. If I remember rightly, does Johnny the Yaris not still fit into that bracket?
Should do. Should be okay.
I think he did. I think it was just but
Transport for London are still saying, oh, it's only going to be 300,000 diesels and only 250,000 petrols. And the SMMT are going, no, it's 780,000 diesels and nearly 860,000 petrols. You are deciding that people will be either ditching their cars or whatever by then. You are not being realistic. So because this has all come in, because of when we covered the transportation plan, they'd done another survey, hadn't they? Another questionnaire. And they asked, oh, should we increase the ULEZ? But they didn't ask it in the right way. They didn't say, but don't forget, if you're in there, this is the criteria. And this this may mean that your car is affected or anything. They just said, would you like clean air? You know, it was that sort of questioning. It was a. Of course, they're going to get positive response, wasn't it?
It was the Yes Minister one. The ones that any time I read those consultancies, I think of that fantastic section of Yes Minister where Sir Humphrey Appleby goes through the questions that would both get you, a survey in favour of conscription, and another one that would get you a survey against conscription by asking questions that, because of the way that they went, forced you into one answer or another. You just couldn't change it. You
know? Exactly.
So. Would you like trained killers on the streets, etc., etc.? Yeah.
But what we have to remember is Transport for London is the only income that Sadiq Khan gets as Mayor of London, so he wants to increase the reach of it, so therefore if he can put more cars off the road, then that's great, because then more people will use his transportation system, which he can then make more money from. And if they don't take polluting cars off the road, then he gets money in from that anyway, so then he gets more money in the coffers.
So it's a win-win for him.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just bored of the pretense that it's all about clean air.
I don't understand how this is enforceable as well, by the way. As it is, they have thousands of cameras, which supposedly they still have to have actually people checking and typing in the number plate because the recognition is not awesome. To this increase in size means there are going to be at least tens, if not hundreds, of more roads where they will need to put cameras. to actually catch us all, really. I don't understand how they're going to implement that, seeing as they haven't yet successfully implemented it on the small area. It makes a loss, by the way. The current one makes a loss. So yeah, I don't understand how that's going to happen. And after, yeah. But politically, if you're into that kind of thing, it's awesome. But there are going to be some very cheap cars.
It just makes some wonderful sounding, sound bites. Look how proactive we're being. I mean, it's great for all of us who live outside and fancy a cheap motor that's possibly a classic or something like that. I mean, Chris Pollitt is probably saving his pennies now, rubbing his hands with glee.
He's probably bought a Montego.
So,
sorry, Chris, but it's true.
But it could be, actually, it could be a series for James Ruppert. Bangonomics that meets the ULEZ.
Yes.
Suddenly the most popular series he does
on
YouTube.
Shut up whilst I write a listicle for motoring research. Yes.
Okay, moving on to more follow-up. This is to do with... We mentioned a few weeks ago that BMW are recalling cars because of an electrical fault which cuts all the power to the entire vehicle, including to hazard warning lights and things like that. And at the time, we mentioned that there was an inquest ongoing because a gentleman... he swerved to avoid a broken down BMW at night and ended up hitting a tree and dying, unfortunately. Now, the inquest has found that BMW's, and I'm quoting from Autocar article here, which will be in the show notes, but the inquest found that BMW's actions contributed to the driver's death, but there was insufficient evidence to suggest corporate manslaughter. Why this was brought up is because BMW was supposed to have known of this problem as early as 2011, and this accident happened in December 2016, but the DVSA didn't know about it until October 2014 when a consumer brought it to their attention, not the manufacturer. So, this does not reflect well on BMW, but they are not... they are not going to be brought into play to do with corporate manslaughter. So that is dealt with. Right, I think this is the last bit of follow-up.
Last piece of follow-up falls to me. So do you remember a little while ago, Tesla? Oh, gee, I'm so sorry.
We don't mention them often. Tesla. You're right.
We don't mention them often, but when we do, we just about weep. Tesla had a little bit of stampy feety and a bit of a hissy fit and stomped off in a cream puff.
Or said they did.
They were essentially...
But they were actually told to go.
Said they did. They were actually told to go by the National Transport and Safety Bureau, Safety Board, pardon me, in the USA, following the incident where a Tesla Model X crashed and the driver... The person at the controls was fatally injured.
Still a driver.
Still a driver. I was being careful. Well, there is a preliminary report out now. It's not the full report. So despite... and what's interesting about this is it contradicts maybe what Tesla released previously. It's quite interesting. There'll be a link to the little news release. It's very readable. It's only a few hundred words long. And it goes through and it describes what happened in the last few minutes.
But before you mention that, Alan, before you run through a couple of those, it does say at the start of this that the information contained in this report is preliminary and subject to change. Preliminary reports by their nature do not contain analysis and do not discuss probable cause. And as such, no conclusions about the cause of the crash should be drawn from this report. So we're making that clear because it has been reported by others where they have fixated on what the data showed.
Certain points.
We are going to discuss that, don't worry. But we are not drawing conclusions from that and we are not suggesting anything. We are just reporting exactly what the NTSB is reporting.
Yes, we will not say. No, we won't. I can't even bring myself.
No, it would be clear what we won't be saying.
In a semi-joking way, I was going to say we are not going to say that this is autopilot's fault. We're also not going to say that it's not. But so yeah, that's what we're clearly not saying either of those things.
No, we are reporting the fact. Yeah.
Yes, so it is very interesting. I'll run through some of them. So US Highway 101. The Tesla kind of adaptive cruise control chunk of its onboard systems was set at 75 miles an hour. The speed limit is 65 miles an hour. It was following a vehicle that was doing 65 miles an hour, and so it was sitting there. It was subsequently involved in collisions with a 2010 Mazda 3 and a 2017 Audi A4, which was hard enough to breach the battery pack in there. In the run-up to this, in the 32-minute trip, autopilot was on 4 times, including being on continuously for 18 minutes, 55 seconds up to the crash. In those 18 minutes, 55 seconds, the Tesla gave 2 visual alerts, 1 audio alert for the driver to place their hands on the steering wheel, which of course they should be anyway. The last of those was made more than 15 minutes before the crash occurred. Driver's hands were detected at the steering wheel for a total of 34 seconds on 3 separate occasions in the 60 seconds before impact. Okay, so in that last minute, hands were mostly on the steering wheel. The vehicle did not detect the driver's hand on the steering wheel in the 6 seconds before the crash. Tesla was following a lead vehicle, travelling about 65 miles an hour, as I said, 8 seconds before the crash. Whilst following a lead vehicle, the Tesla began a left steering movement 7 seconds before the crash. The Tesla was no longer following a lead vehicle 4 seconds before the crash, and the Tesla's speed increased, starting 3 seconds before impact and continuing until the crash, from 62 to 70.8 miles an hour. There was no braking or evasive steering detected prior to impact. What's worth mentioning about what it hit was it hit an already damaged crash attenuator at the end of a highway barrier, a slip road barrier.
Mm-hmm.
Which was mentioned earlier, which I didn't read out. So those are the sort of key points as part of that preliminary report. So there is more you can read. Link, of course, to all of that is in the show notes, and you can draw your own conclusions from that.
Yes. As the lawyer of the family of the driver did.
Mm-hmm.
That.
Yes, I'm sure. That was mostly about Tesla saying that it was all their fault when they can't possibly have said that at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yep.
I'm sure that there will be writs and stuff flying back and forth.
Oh yes, I can see this one running.
Understandably and quite rightly, I think. In my mind. Mm. Anyway, right. Finally, end of the follow-up.
New news.
Andrew, tell us about new things, but very, very quickly.
Okay, new things. We're going to talk about emission defeat devices, Alan. I kid you not. However, this is for Mercedes.
Talk fast.
This is for Mercedes.
Oh, that makes it all so much better and more interesting. Come on, get to the numbers.
Greg Cable, who we have mentioned recently as the man in the know and the one who releases the scoops, has an article in Autocar because late yesterday, it was announced that the German Transport Ministry had ordered Mercedes to recall up to 774,000 cars across Europe because the Transport Ministry says that they have unauthorized software or which equates to defeat devices to manipulate diesel exhaust emissions. Now,
can I very quick
go on?
Sorry, I was just going to interrupt you and be annoying. Can I point out that it's up to 774,000 cars across Europe because it's 238,000 in Germany, but the KBA can't actually recall vehicles outside of Germany.
No, true.
So it's a great headline figure of like 750,000, but the KBA, an official from the KBA told Autocar that it's only authorised to order a recall of cars within its own borders, i.e. in Germany, or cars issued with a pan-European roadworthiness certification.
Yep.
Suggesting Mercedes diesel owners in the UK will have to wait until full details, or for full details, for a possible Britain-wide recall. So there's nothing for the UK yet, only Germany, despite the big numbers.
Yep. This covers, at the minute, Vito C-Class GLCs. There could be other models affected, and we're not exactly sure what the age of the diesel engines are, but it seems to suggest that it's the Euro 6, the Euro 6 ones. So we'll have to wait and see till more information is released on that. Interestingly, Mercedes said that they're going to comply. However, they need clarification on whether the software is in fact illegal, because you are allowed, remember there's this loophole with the engines, that if you state you do have a software that reduces some functionality and you have a short period of more emissions, it's because you're doing it for longevity of the engine, to protect the engine, that sort of thing. And apparently that's acceptable. So that little tiny loophole. So as long as you tell people, that's okay. Yeah. However, they're waiting to get clarification, which they will do at a separate meeting down the line, to just say, well, hang on, we feel we followed the legislation of EU. So that should be okay. So the German Transport Ministry will need to explain why that is not seen as okay. And interestingly on top of that, the EU Commissioner put her oar in once again. Oh, she does like to...
she's a real mouse.
Oh, she's one. Sorry. She's the one, if we all remember, that wants diesels banned almost immediately and then has not thought through how is she going to get her latest iPad, or, you know, whatever, the avocados, how are they going to be transported to her easily so she can have a nice avocado crush on, you know, whole wheat grain toast in the morning, and how's that going to get to her, and how's that going to be made? But glossing over those, you know, trifling little things like facts, she came straight out. She was just like she was waiting on Twitter to do this. Said, we need full support for the actions. We need mandatory recalls in all 28 EU member states. Other countries should follow quickly. Diesel scandal is still not over. It's really time to make rapid progress on zero emission cars. I don't know. Maybe I'm not paying attention, but I thought
on occasion I can tell why people vote Leave.
Yes. Quite a few. Well, no. What I think it also shows is that Europe is, you know, Britain does not have the monopoly on stupid people. Certainly, stupid politicians. So there we go. So we will have to wait and see how that pans out, because I think Daimler is gearing up really, really expensive lawyers to start saying, "Hang on, we followed the EU rules, and now you're saying that's not good enough." That's not fair. Yeah,
absolutely.
And if Mercedes get done for that, then other countries will then look at the people who've got companies based on theirs, won't they?
So, as I've tried to say about five times now, the people will then say, "Well, what about Fiat? What about Opel? Because they use the same get out clause." Or Peugeot, and was it PSA? No, it wasn't present. Anyway, what about others? And they said, well, actually, their head offices, they're based outside of Germany, so it doesn't count.
Yep.
So they can't be raided by...
No, but the Dutch can raid Opel.
Are they not based in Paris nowadays?
No, their head office is in Holland. Because I was chatting to Greg about this last night on Twitter.
Oh, fair enough then.
Asking that exact question, you see.
Ah, okay. Okay, that's. I was busy trying not to catch fleas and stuff. So yeah,
right. So let's move on because I've ranted enough there. But we're going to continue with the missions, though.
You did. I couldn't get you to shut up. Yeah, the trip. Yes, there is a.
Diesels are killing us now.
Yeah, sorry. There's more diesels are killing us now. This is what happens when I let Andrew do the entire running order and then don't pop enough of a fight, everyone. Okay? So please, don't let this happen next week. Should be okay. Yeah. Oh, God. I can't even be bothered, to be perfectly honest. So there is an initiative called the Real Urban Emissions Initiative, or TRU. Works really well, the TRU Initiative, which involves a number of groups, including the International Council on Clean Transportation. Okay, I can't see how they'd be any slant. The FIA Foundation, who are well known for being middle of the road and uncorruptible. Global NCAP, who do great work around safety.
And want to get into emissions now. Have you noticed that over the weekend?
Emissions now.
They are proposing new levels for emission testing.
Yes, I'm sure they are, because they want to get into all the testing everywhere.
Because let's not forget, they're a business.
Totally. Oh, God, who wound you up?
I've had no one to talk to all day.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. That's what's wrong with you. Well, you see, whereas I haven't actually stopped talking all day today. They've collated together a whole load of information between 2011 and 2017, which shows just how evil diesel vehicles are. It completely missed out, and I'm not quite sure when I read into this in more detail. Here on this Autocar article and also on their own website, both of which will be linked in the show notes, naturally. I don't know how they've split out just which vehicles are magically being tested from this vast number.
Yes, because they're using a different test system. They're using it where it's not invasive, aren't they? They're basically putting the sensors by the side of the road, and there's
shining beams a
monitoring
of light
system, like a laser thing. Yeah, and I don't understand, because I haven't had a chance to read fully into this or look into this system, how they feel they can be that accurate if they're sat by a road. How do they know that those particulates are from that car
and not other cars
maybe on the other side of the road or that have just passed?
Right. And so the European Auto Manufacturers Association have real issues with this, funnily enough. So there's a big war coming about that. This is going to go on and on. It's going to do one of two things. So it's going to go on and on, or it's going to fizzle out because it's a bit dumb. But what's really annoying me about all of this and pretty much everything that we've talked about so far is that so much of it is based on people trying to make a name for themselves rather than actually trying to solve the problem. We all want better air quality.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm desperately trying to do here is I'm trying not to completely scoff at the whole idea. That's why I want to know more about the sensors they use.
I'm not,
but I'm not impressed with the way they have grabbed the headlines because they haven't. And I think this is what you were trying to say. If I don't keep interrupting you, but they have ignored the latest engines.
Yes, they have.
Because the testing regime finished before the latest engines were out, which are even cleaner than before.
And this is the main gripe of the automotive industry, is you're saying, yeah, okay, but we've moved on. You're testing previous generations. We've already moved on to the next one. What you're talking about now is not representative of new vehicles going forward. So, great, grab all your headlines, but what you're talking about isn't reflecting current reality. Right, move on. quickly, because I'm getting very bored of talking about emissions testing, and this is the last one tonight about this. So just quick.
Yes.
Quick and then sharp, all right?
Okay. Well, Volkswagen says, because of WLTP, they are going to be hit like Porsche. We mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. Porsche are about to stop, actually, production because they need to test vehicles to go through the system, and then they're only going to build those cars that have been tested on the production line after that point. Well, Volkswagen is going to have to go through the same pain, and they're going to shut down on certain days in September and August, I believe. And then they are only going to be able to build the cars that they have had tested up to then. So that it's going to be like, we'll do the mass, you know, the most popular ones first, and then we'll get to the more specialized ones. With Volkswagen, I don't think it's going to be quite the same as with Porsche, where, you know, you can really, you can really specify down to quite a tight thing compared to, you know, there's only so many engines they'll stick in a Volkswagen in certain models. Yeah. So, you know, it's not going to be as hard for them, shall we say. Just going to be a pain.
So part of the problem here really is that you just can't whistle test rigs out of fresh air.
Because there isn't any fresh air, Alan.
That's the problem.
It's all full of nitrogen oxide. We're all dying.
Right, moving on. Had enough. Moving on. Okay, so there's a report out by the Thatcham Institute. Yes, yet another one of these research institutes about the use of the word autonomous is a major safety hazard, actually, because it's giving completely the wrong information to people. It's an article on motoring research by Richard Alcock. There's even a cartoon-style graphic which illustrates, I think, the problem really quite well.
Yeah, it does, actually.
And there's an excellent video that's worth 2.5 minutes of your time just to show. Worth mentioning, though, in fairness to the vehicles that they're using to illustrate this, they are taking a worst-case scenario. And I'm not... And this isn't me making excuses, but it's worth pointing out that when you watch the video, you see that there's a very, very dark coloured car that the vehicle is following, which then in a perfectly reasonable way dodges around a queue of traffic to avoid it, and the vehicle that's running using an assisted driving technologies then runs into the back of a light coloured fake vehicle whilst driving into the sun. Now, that is not an unbelievable situation, but it's also the worst case.
And it's one we know that certain vehicles can't cope with.
Yes.
And technology. Sorry, technology is not the vehicle. It's the technology in the vehicle. The
vehicle is perfectly capable of swerving from one lane to another. Some of the technologies can't pick out the differences quickly enough. So it's worth mentioning that in the video, it is a worst-case scenario, but not an unrealistic worst-case scenario.
No, not at all.
Okay, how's about that?
Right, so should we take a...
We've nailed that one.
No. Should we take a breath now, Alan? And maybe your calm can return.
I don't know. I haven't had a chance to talk so far.
Your calm can return, because we're not going to mention emissions now for the rest of the show.
I promise I won't let him do that again.
It's not my fault all those items of news came out in the last week.
It is. You don't have to talk about all of them.
Well, anyway, we have to do the follow-up.
Point in the show. Yes, we do. It's that point in the show where we remind you about the ability to support what we do so that you can hear 31 minutes of uninterrupted discussion about diesel. if you feel that this is worth... And to be honest, I'm having trouble believing it tonight.
You're not selling it, really.
I'm not really. This is worth your investment. Then we do really appreciate any contributions that you give us via Patreon. Patreon's an online service. For donating a set amount each month. if that's possible. If you want to find out more about it, please head to motoringpodcast.com and click on the orange Become a Patron button on the front page. We have many patrons already.
Thank you all that do.
Love you lots.
You are lovely, so wonderful much. People.
You are. You're awesome, wonderful people who interact so much and help make this podcast better, even without the money, but the money is nice. Yes, we really, really appreciate it. Please, though, don't forget to tell a friend. Word of mouth is a fantastic way of spreading information about podcasts and just about things in general, really. If you don't already subscribe to the show, if you could subscribe, that would be great via Apple Podcasts or any other podcatcher that's out there. We can always provide recommendations if you give us a shout and let us know your chosen platform. Leaving a review and rating would be fantastic, because that really does affect the crazy algorithms that go on in the background. Go on, what are you smirking for?
What?
No? Well, I thought you were
No.
And it also means you won't miss the next riveting installment of Stories on Diesels.
No.
And some of the other interesting.
No, I think we'll get a bit of a break from VW.
I think we will. I think there's been a splurge of it this week, and then it'll settle.
It's going to be September.
I'm saying that a lot. Germany goes on holiday now. Okay, remember, most of Europe goes on holiday now, so there'll be far less of this kind of news, because there won't be the people around to report on it. There won't be so much of it actually being made. I would imagine we're going to get the next splurge of this kind of stuff the first half of October, just before the Paris Motor Show. That's my big prediction. Now, my predictions are almost always wrong, so that's not what's going to happen at all. But that's what I believe is going to happen right at the minute. It'll possibly come early. It'll possibly come into September.
Yeah, I think they go back to court in September for the testimonies. So we might get some.
There'll be a round of doom and gloom. Maybe the French government will do it just before the Paris Motor Show.
Anyway, let's move on to motorsport, Alan.
Yay, motorsport moment. Formula E, a fantastically historic race for Formula E this. Last weekend, because it was in Zurich, and that's been the first actual race of any form, motor race even, in Switzerland for some ridiculous number of years, 64 years.
I think it was 56, wasn't it, the last when they banned because of a crash at Le Mans?
Something like that. It was because of the massive crash at Le Mans, where... 38 people killed and many more injured, many tens injured as well. And they said, no, motor racing, way too dangerous. We're not going to have any of that in Switzerland. And that has held up until last weekend. So winning such a historic race was Lucas Degrassi from the Audi Sport Abt team. I've just opened that page again. I didn't mean to. For AB team, his first win the 2017-2018 season, amazingly enough. There have been some pretty close ones. He came in first, and then Sam Bird came in second. So well done to them.
Yeah, apparently there was a bunch of controversial penalties thrown at drivers. Unfortunately, I missed the race this time.
Well, so did I. There were lots of bits and pieces and funny penalties and things happening. But I'm sure they were playing it absolutely and completely by the rules, given that this was...
Buemi was fifth again, wasn't he? So he's still not... That car is still not working for him, which is a surprise.
Yes.
Which is a surprise.
He's just not happy with it at all. What also happened in there was Jean-Éric Vergne's championship lead, of course... has taken a fair old knock because of Sam Bird out there. So he's obviously catching up on John there.
Yep. Yes, but there's a bit of extra news.
One other piece of news as well.
Yep.
Yes, I forgot about that. Nico Prost, son of two-thirds size espresso thief.
As we must Alan refer Prost. To him on this show. So we are legally obliged.
He's lovely. He really is nice. Then he won't be staying with the Renault team into next year when it switches to being a Nissan. You know, one of the other partners in the Rebel Alliance in there. Of course, Alan Prost ran the team from the very start of Formula One, but sold up his share relatively recently. So he's also decided he's probably off to try some other form of motorsport. He's not had a great season this year.
No, he's pointless in six races, isn't he?
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Six races without a box since the last time he scored any points. But in the past, he's done really very well. You know, I just maybe the Renault team's just not as.
I
awesome
get the feeling their car is not very good this year. Because if Buemi's not up towards the sharp end, I mean, the thing is that
the Gen 2 next year is going to give a huge. It's going to shake the entire thing up yet again. So we don't really know quite what's going to happen.
Yeah, should be very interesting.
Mm. Mm. A little bit of WRC news as well, because Toyota got on the podium, didn't they? Sorry,
there are
other teams.
It was WRC Italy, or in Sardinia, and another high attrition round. Crikey. Lots of people
broke things. Yeah, but
those
high attrition rounds give some... including Tanaka.
Yes.
The thing about these high attrition rounds, they get some awesome photographs.
Yes. Tanak smashed his two radiators on one of these handmade jumps, or man-made jumps, which actually there is an article in Autosport that the drivers say, come on, we need to sort this out because it's getting ridiculous. They're complaining that the lead up to it is too short. So you can only come down virtually on your nose if you're hitting them in sixth, which is where they're putting them in the end, in the middle of a long straight. So, it doesn't matter what car you've got, you get that slightly wrong and the car's toast. And that's silly because you want the cars to race on. so they're asking for longer, shallower ramps up to them and that sort of thing. So, but we'll see whether that comes in. Anyway,
you'll notice
back to
being rally drivers, they don't. Being rally drivers, they don't say no jumps, please. They're like, can we change the jumps?
Yeah. Is that, well, Ogier, I think, said, you can have as many jumps as you like, but just let's smooth them out a little bit.
Yeah.
And when you see the highlights, either on the Red Bull TV or it was on Channel 5 last night, they really do go up high, and then it is a case of gravity now takes over, and they come down nose front. So...
Yeah,
even with the short overhangs these cars have got, you're still struggling to absorb that in the suspension and tyres rather than the bodywork.
If you've ever seen the suspension on these things is a work of art. Mm. We weren't allowed to take pictures in that part of the Toyota garage, sadly, in Sweden.
But anyway, back to the race. On the very final section... Nouvelle won, beat pipping Ogier by 0.7 seconds. Nouvelle had a good run on the back end of Saturday to get back in contention, and then he just stormed it Sunday. And Ogier started to feel the pressure. Looking in the highlights, first time I've ever seen him sort of flap. He rushed off from one of the timing checks. It was to the point where, you know, they normally they open the door and put the camera in and ask some questions. He was like, no, and just shut the door and drove off. And was so flappy about it that he forgot to wait for his timing card.
Oh, that's like number one amateur.
Yeah, so he was clearly feeling the pressure. And someone else brought it for him. So he's been given a suspended penalty. He's been given suspended penalty points. Yeah. For the rest of the season, I believe, and as long as it doesn't happen again, that's okay. But he was complaining that his car started to oversteer on the Sunday, which is where he was losing time. But Nouvelle just, he just went for it. I've watched the in-car footage and the stuff from the helicopters and things. He gets up on two wheels at one point in this final thing and still wins by 0.7 of a second. So it's just because these tracks in this place, they are basically a goat track that has stone walls either side. There is no room for getting it wrong on some of these. And the rocks that some of these poor drivers have clobbered and have ruined their weekends and their chances of points is just amazing. Again, it's just such a fantastic visual sport, this is. It's just utterly amazing.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It was, and it's so amazing when you're there. I mean,
the noise must be brilliant as well. And just, But yeah, like I say, it's the first time I've seen Ogier flap a bit. He's normally Mr. Cool. And so that's it. Well, I mean,
it's turning into a really quite an interesting season.
Nouvelle's up front now. And competition, yeah. Hyundai have stretched their lead in the constructors over M Sport. Citroën had... They tried to put the gloss on it and say we had a solid weekend coming fifth and sixth, but they were 4 or 5 minutes behind because their car kept stalling on corners. Now, I'm no expert, but I do believe that makes it quite tricky. Yeah, suboptimal, I believe, is the phrasing. So, yes, we Citroën have binned Meek, but was Meek trying so hard to try and make up for deficiencies in the car? It just sounds like they haven't got a good car at the minute. But Toyota managed to pip into third after quite a poor weekend for them. They were struggling early on as well.
Well, they got caught out by the jumps.
Well, there was that, but anyway, their diff wasn't working well enough on the slower corners on Friday.
I missed that. Okay, so Toyota are looking for a really good weekend this coming weekend, though, Andrew.
What, in Le Mans?
Yes, Le Mans. I think they are. Yes.
I think they are. And as we did last year, we have got a link to Andy Blackmore's Le Mans spotter guide. So click on the link there if you want to play along at home and check that out because it is utterly brilliant. The work he must put into this is phenomenal. And thank you, Andy, for allowing us to put this on here and tell people to go and check it out.
Yeah, totally, and all the other media things that support it as well, because it goes through a whole bunch of revisions as well as they keep changing the car.
Yeah, the one I've got linked at the minute is version 2 because they've done scrutineering, but that will change after they do qualifying and testing and more not testing because they've done testing, but
this week. Yeah,
yeah. So that'll be interesting. Yes.
Awesome. Next up, Volvo. Volvo, yes. Then a curious announcement earlier this week, Volvo pulling out of next year's Geneva Motor Show. Volvo traditionally have a decent sized stand there in quite a good spot. But they are, they're saying, well, according to, well, to quote Bjorn Anval, the senior vice president of strategy branded retail at Volvo Cars, they're saying the ongoing change in the car industry is creating new audiences for Volvo Cars and new ways of bringing products to the market. Automatic attendance at traditional industry events is no longer viable. We must tailor our communications based on how the options complement our messaging, timing, and the nature of the technology we're presenting. Now, it's generally withdrawn from motor shows. Geneva was one of the few exceptions because it was always quite small. And they're now saying they're going to do their own events and purpose-specific communications. Now, I worry about this a bit because I wonder that when car companies do this, I wonder that they're getting a bit too big for their boots. I'm going, well, we're so well known, we don't need to turn up to these things. And what I found over the years, going to Geneva with my dad, who's relatively savvy, but tends to be a bit sort of one track when it comes to these things, is that he will often go to stands, and I'll go, well, look at this, and he'll go, wow, I didn't expect X brand, Y brand to be doing something like this, and Volvo has been one of those brands where he goes, really, look how well they've come on. Look at this. This is really nice. I quite like that. And I've even had him, he didn't buy it in the end, but I even got him to go as far as the showroom to look at Volvos and to take one out for a test drive. Why didn't he go further? Because he didn't like the salesman. Not because he didn't like the car, but he didn't like the salesman. And that happened because he saw it at motor shows. And I worry that when people go, oh, we're going to do our own specific events and we're going to have, you know, we're going to do special things in special places for special people.
But that's become more and more common, hasn't it?
A bit, yeah. But what they then do is they then start to miss out on the other people that they maybe don't know as part of their demographic.
Oh, yeah,
or
absolutely.
Are interested in being in there. And I worry that that's the case with that. I mean, I hope it works. Awesome. We like Volvo. We love the success of Volvo and we want it to continue and continue and continue. But do be careful.
Yeah, that's
all I'm going to say.
It sort of ties a little bit into that press release that was easily misunderstood. You know, when they did their big giant electrification.
The electrification one that everybody thought they wanted to make electric cars.
Begins
not have to, a model that may be a hybrid.
Yeah, it begins to bring up not necessarily a red flag, but maybe amber ones of, oh, hang on, just pay attention. I'm not saying they're going down the line of, you know, Silicon Valley type control the message, but it's something we really have to pay attention to just to make sure something isn't being declared that it isn't.
I'm sure that they will not make the mistake again of maybe being a little Swedish about stuff, he says, sitting in Stockholm.
I hope so, because that would be a massive worry for me if they did go down a line of communicating things out that wasn't as transparent as they have been, shall we say.
Yes, quite. And the trouble is, the thing is that at these large events, then everyone gets to see them, not just the people invited to specific, unique events that they decide are going to give the message that maybe they want.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you that I can sort of see them not attending a motor show because they think they've got access to the car people, where they will go and be at, I don't know, because they're heavily into sponsoring sailing, aren't they? So they'll be at regattas with their cars and things to remind people that aren't necessarily car people but need a car. Oh, we do this.
Yeah, which
we do
is
this
cool.
Lovely thing, by the way. Come and have a look, sit in it, have a chat to people. You know, and I can understand them trying to do, you know, that more specific. You know, what they're saying there is the purpose-specific communications. Grabbing another quote from them again, I can understand them trying to do that. Because it's all expensive, isn't it? It's all really expensive.
Oh, it's trade shows are heinously expensive. Let's not pretend otherwise. Okay, I'm not. You know, it's even for.
I mean, we've talked
car
about,
manufacturer. It's more than just.
Yeah, we've talked
change.
About how we think Goodwood is the future for motor shows because people can, you know, particularly the Thursday moving motor show. But I believe that is horrifically expensive to pitch up. At.
Yes.
And, you know, it gets to a certain point where a manufacturer will have to turn and go, no, we're not going to go. We're not going to go. Forget it. You can't charge that much.
Polestar are also unveiling their Polestar 1 and showing it running at Goodwood this year. So. Anyway, should we move on? Because we're really running very long tonight.
We can. Designer's mood board. We were quickly through that, considering how many items there was. We were through it in half an hour. We did well. Right, designer's mood board before Alan gets too doomy and gloomy. I'll start calling him Eeyore this week. Rolls-Royce's design chief has stepped down. So Giles Taylor is going to leave the company to pursue, and I'm quoting here from BMW Group, alternative business interests. They haven't sorted a successor out yet, but he came in to post in 2012 replacing Ian Cameron. And he's helped bring forward the Dawn Convertible, the Cullinan.
The Cullinan's really impressive.
It should be. It's the size of a small stately home.
It is. That's what's so flaming impressive about it.
But he's also dealing with those one-off models that we talked about. So be interesting to see who they get on board for that, actually, because that is a real tricky brand where you are trying to move it forward, but it's still got to be very recognisable.
Awfully difficult. It's one of those really tricky jobs.
I think it is.
Because the people have such a picture in their mind of what a Rolls-Royce is. By the way, second time in about a month and a half, 2 months, this hotel does go above a Rolls-Royce concessionaire. I don't know, dealership's not the right word, I think. Showroom.
Well, it's luxury brand, so what they think they're...
They have brand showrooms that have shops.
No, I know it's not a shop, but it's, it's boutique, possibly.
Oh, it is a boutique, yes, thank you. That's the word. That's what I was looking for.
Anyway, lunchtime read. Come on, you want to hurry things up.
Oh, lunchtime, I know. Lunchtime read, motoring research. Gavin Braithwaite Smith has written a long, long piece on the history of the Volvo 480 ES and 480 Turbo.
That's fab.
They are. They do sit on the Dutch plinth of shame in the Volvo Museum, though. For being a non-Gothenburg car. But I think they look wonderful. I really do. And I think there was such a sidestep, an unexpected step for Volvo at the time. I think they're wonderful. But what always sticks in my mind about these was the autocar long-termer that they had where just everything broke. Everything broke.
Didn't it?
And then, admittedly, that was in the late 1980s. But they had one, and it was just a total disaster, and that's what's always shaped my opinion of them. I think they're great looking. I never want to touch one.
I've always thought they're good looking, and it's only just now, as I'm looking at the picture that's the profile of a red one, that I've realised probably why I did. They remind me so much of the Honda Accord Aerodeck.
Oh, what a surprise. Drink.
Well, no, I have been having several conversations in the last week about that on Twitter. But I just think they're fab. And they're only four-seater, so that's no good for me. But you can see how the C30...
Perfectly fine. You just leave Mrs. Winter.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, all right. It's all right. Yeah. I'll pass on your regards. but you can see where the C30 came from. And again, I think that's a gorgeous little car.
And in-house design as well. Anyway, we're not going to talk much more about that because there is a really good article there. So please go give it your clicks and give it a bit of a read.
Yes, do. So you found this, and finally. Talking of drinks, Alan.
I didn't
find... Right, everyone, charge your glasses before we get going.
No, you see, the thing is, I didn't find this, and finally. Everyone said this and finally to me.
You're mentioning it.
I am.
I ask you to be upstanding, ladies and gentlemen. Charge your glasses. Cool. Raise them to the plinth of Alan.
Get ready. It is a Toyota. So it's a Tamiya. Tamiya have released a 110 scale model of the current Yaris WRC car. It's four-wheel drive. It looks wonderful. I hate to think how much it costs.
But if you got one of those, right, really you cool could present. 3D print the aero at the back and add it to yours and enlarge it. Just think of that, because they'll have taken a careful replication.
Alternatively, what I could do is I could go speak to people who do 3D printing and who we may or may not know. We could actually make parts which don't make my own car into a WRC car, but which make the WRC car look like a GRMN, and the wheels would stick outside. I don't care. I just think it looks awesome, and I'd love to have it sitting on my shelf because it's so difficult. There are no models. There are no models of GRMN yet. And,
so if anybody's looking for a Christmas present for Alan, add this to your list.
Yeah,
totally. I get savings.
It's genius. It's really cool. Yeah, I don't know. I must. It probably is like three figures beginning with a five.
I would imagine.
I tell myself it's that, so that if I find out it's less, then I'm pleasantly surprised.
Ooh, it's a bargain. I'll get it now. You have to do some reorganising on your shelf.
Oh, big time. Well, I need new shelves. Okay. I need new storage in the office because the current mess is annoying me and has been annoying me for too long. Anyway, should we round up? Because we've gone on long. Ooh, we're going to nail it if we get on with it now.
We'll I know. So fine. Stop worrying. It's like you don't want to be with the listeners. It's just shameful of you, Alan.
I want to go to my bed. I'm very, very tired. Some parish notes this week. Chris Pollitt's Rear View is out. So it did come out on Saturday because someone who's ultra chirpy tonight was not ultra chirpy on Friday.
I wasn't anything.
Last week.
I was breathing. That was about as far as I got.
It was mostly pretending to be a snail was the impression I got from the messages to me that I only got at 6 o'clock in the evening.
Yes, I got shouted at for still being up when Mrs. Crap Windscreen got in.
Well, she's right. She's a very wise woman. Reviews are out. Go listen to it. I'm halfway through because that was as much as I managed to listen to on the flight out here.
It is a long one. Really, really good. It's a good one.
It's a total cracker. It's 2 hours, but it's kind of got to be 2 hours. And it'll do you last week. Once you finish with that, hopefully you will complete that just about Friday. Friday, there will be a special edition out as well. Which I think should be a good one.
It is.
There's already 150 out, by the way, that I did came out on Saturday. On the blog parts of motoringpodcast.com/ is it /new-blog? It's something which I never renamed at the time because it never seemed important and now wish I had. But if you go to motoringpodcast.com, then there is a 150, a link to a blog and a video all about the revised Toyota Aygo, which I was in Copenhagen last week driving, as you've probably seen from Twitter and Instagram and stuff. So find out a little bit more about that there, and then that should whet your appetite for the end of the week. Mm-hmm. And that pretty much sums it up, I think. Don't forget, folks, that between now and next time, you can give us any feedback and share your thoughts with the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, the hub of all our activities. And thanks very much for the feedback and stuff that we've received over the past week. There's been lots of really good stuff. So thank you.
Yes,
so
thank
much.
You for that. It is appreciated, and we do read and take it on board.
Yes. Remember that we have a Patreon offer available at motoringpodcast.com/support, which also lists all the other ways that you can support us. Please don't forget to leave a review and ratings on Apple Podcasts or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. It really does matter. Andrew, the best way to get in touch with you if people want to know more about diesel pollution.
The best way to get in touch with me is via Twitter. If you search for Crack Windscreen, you will find me there. And Alan, if people want to tell you that this week you are Eeyore in his sad pasture worrying about that we're trying to spend too long discussing things like emissions and, I don't know, WLTP, then what's the best way I should get in touch with you?
Yeah, if you want to tell me that you find it equally as dull, then do get in touch with me on Twitter at AJPBradley, BRADLEY. If you think Andrew's right, then I don't know. we'll be back next week, but until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.